Hi, this is Jason.
This is Matt.
And welcome to Wish You Were Here, the podcast for the curious traveler.
Every episode explores a different destination and includes inside tips on where to go and what to do, some fun history, travel-inspired games, and a good conversation between two travel pros.
Yes, and what a week it has been.
I feel like as soon as you say that, though, everybody's going to look at the date because that basically describes every week of 2020. But this week in particular has been really rough.
Right. We should say that we're recording this on a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So we are in the middle of we are now on day 8 of protests, I think. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. I think George Floyd was murdered about 10 days ago. And we are now on day 8 or 8 plus of protests in many U.S. cities and across the world, really.
So how are you feeling?
It's really hard. I think I, like a lot of people, I'm just like struggling to reconcile this in the middle of everything going on. And I want to say, I think firstly, that you and I are two white guys. And so we're talking about this and viewing this through that lens, but this mm-hmm. does really impact us. And it is something that I care a great deal about. And it's, I'm finding myself at many times like uncomfortable with what I'm seeing and having these conversations. And I'm really challenging myself to be uncomfortable because that's how growth happens. Mm-hmm. and really transform some of my behaviors. And I think one of the things I've been sort of stressed about is like wanting to do so much good and not really knowing where to put that motivation or that anger. And I saw something that I felt was really, that really helped me, which is like, it's okay to find your lane when you are looking to do good. Like some people really find the donation lane or promoting on social media lane, or some people yeah. are out in the streets doing that. And it's okay yeah. if you're not all the things all the time. And I think a lot of us who want to make change put a lot of pressure on ourselves to do that. And it's okay to find your lane while you encourage others to do what is in their lane.
I am so glad you said that because I've been struggling with that. Hmm. And so you've made me feel better, right? Because there's that sense of, am I doing enough?
Yeah.
I have made donations. I have watched recommended, like I've viewed, you know, like recommended viewing. I have not been on the streets protesting, which I feel very guilty about, but it's harder in LA because we have these curfews and I don't want to drive to these protest sites because there's police cars everywhere. So I'm like, how do I get to them? And then how do I get back? So yeah. I have that, you know, like, and I'm doing all the right stuff on social media, I hope. So I'm really glad you said that. Find your lane. I think yeah. that's really great, Matt.
Yeah. And if you are somebody who can like do all the things when you're, and I really mean like for a lot of us, it is daily transformation. This is something that is like outside of my scope of my life. I'm like a privileged white yeah. kid, right? From mostly California or the Midwest. And so I'm viewing this through a very specific lens. And so I'm trying to make changes that are meaningful, that stick, and that are also like going to carry weight to them. So one of the things that I've been doing and trying to transform my life and my feed around is actually just giving me more exposure. So on Instagram and Twitter, I started following a bunch of accounts that I wasn't following before. So black business mm-hmm. accounts, black celebrities, people who are prominent voices in this movement. And my mm-hmm. hope is that like the ridiculous Instagram feed will then start to give me new voices and expose mm-hmm. me to new material, which it has been doing, which is awesome. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is really going out of my way to support black businesses. Everything that you buy or that you like, there is a wonderful black business version of it. So athleisure, restaurants, you know, techware, mm-hmm. or like tech companies, all of those too. So I want to just give a quick shout out to two apps that can help with that. One is a food delivery app called Eat Okra, and they're not everywhere, but they are in a lot of major cities. And what it does is it identifies black owned restaurants in hopefully your city where you can actually get delivery or go support them. And then the second one is called the Official Black Wall Street. And it's basically a huge directory of black owned businesses. And if you turn on location, it will like if you're walking around a city, it'll tell you you're near a certain black owned business. So you can kind of go out of your way to go check it out or go support.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That is so cool. I've had a couple things in my mind as well. One is that this was really interesting. We look at 2020 and we think, oh my gosh, we're in the middle of a global pandemic that led to a depression. And now there's protests on top of that. Isn't that so horrible? And then a friend of mine was saying to me, isn't it so wonderful that these protests happened in the middle of all this? And I was like, tell me more. And she was like, well, isn't it so great that we have the time to sit with our feelings and actually think about it? We have time to watch a Netflix documentary on racial justice. We have people who are not working because of businesses being closed, have time to go into the streets and let their voices be heard. She's like, isn't that so fortunate? And I hadn't thought of it that way.
That is a great perspective. Yeah. I think a lot of like terrible things have been happening for as long as I've been alive. And I think one of the things that stymies, now you've got me thinking that one of the things that stymies movement is like availability to help. Sometimes I feel like I have to either choose between like my Monday to Friday job or advocacy in the streets. And that feels like an unfair choice. And so this is a rare time where you get a lot of people do have, I don't want to call it a luxury, but they have the availability to be public and help advocate. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's that I hadn't thought of it through that lens or through that perspective, but I was like, yeah, that's great. And I've been trying hard to just sit with my feelings and see what comes up. And it's, you know, it's different because I live alone. And so my only connection with the outside world is through social media and the news. Yeah. And the news isn't always great. I don't have a television, but I can still read it and I can still see clips online and so forth. But
can I ask, is there anything like as you're sitting and, you know, seeing what comes up, is there anything that has surprised you?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, we talked about it a second ago, which was this feeling of not being able to do enough.
Mm.
This feeling of how can I contribute to the dialogue in a meaningful way and not trip over myself, right? Yeah. And I think about this too, because, you know, I'm an LGBTQ person, right? And so I always want, you know, my advice to straight people would always be ask the stupid question, say the stupid thing. Let's have the conversation. You know, don't be afraid to. But then I often think like, to myself, I'm like, should I post this on social media? Or people are going to think I'm a dum-dum, you know? But it's funny, when I would teach my students, when I went back in, when I was a part-time professor in Chicago, I would always encourage them to ask dumb questions. I would be like, ask a dumb question. It might be the same thing that's on everyone's brain. But we do fear what, you know, social media pile on, right? So like that can be an obstacle to constructive dialogue. And, you know, social media is both a curse and a blessing in some ways, right? You know, when a crisis arises.
I do think a lot of people don't know how to contribute. But one of the things I will say, and I take this advice very seriously myself, just like as a white person, is like the best thing you can do is like listen and educate yourself. And when you are getting ready to post or ask questions, like you've got a responsibility to check yourself and check where that question is coming from. Because if I'm making a post and it's actually about me getting recognition for being so supportive, then like you've lost, right? And I think that that's true sometimes with the questions you ask. You want to be seen as like a stay woke white kid. And so just like check where that thing is. And I would invite you to be curious, to listen and to educate yourself. That's like a great first step before you know where to jump in.
I've also been thinking, that's great advice. I've also been thinking a lot about a lot of things relating to the murder of George Floyd and the subsequent riots have been trending on Twitter. And I've been, you know, because you and I are a travel podcast, you and I work in travel, the hashtag Black Travel has actually been trending.
Mm.
And so I was starting to think about, you know, where there's an intersection between, I guess, let me frame it this way. I was talking about this with a colleague of mine and we were talking about this hashtag together and what it means to be a person of color in the, you know, who's a curious traveler, who's out there in the world wanting to see the world, but, you know, just like everybody does. Everybody loves travel. And we were talking about issues faced by people of color when they travel. And I felt so empathetic because in some ways they're so similar to LGBTQ people. So if I may elaborate here,
please. Yeah. You
know, one thing that, that people are saying, that people of color who travel are saying is that they often find themselves wanting to travel to destinations where they'll see other people of color.
Right.
So
of course,
maybe not running to, you know, Helsinki, Finland, for example, but going to a Caribbean country instead because they want to see people who look like them. And I totally get that. Like I know that when I travel and I've been to every inhabited continent, I've been to every inhabited continent, so I've been everywhere but Antarctica. When I travel to a new city, for example, I arrive in Madrid and it feels foreign and exciting and exotic, but a little mysterious and different. And then I turn a corner and I see the rainbow flags and it's, oh, there's a gay bar. I know I can walk through these doors and there's going to be a drag queen on stage. There's going to be two twinks sitting at the bar gossiping. There's going to be like a bartender
like
in a tank
top.
Speaking
like rapid fire Spanish, right?
Yeah. I get that feeling of community you get when you're around people who look like you or who are like you in some way. And then the other thing is that there are legitimate safety issues that people of color feel when they're traveling to different places. And I understand that as well, because I do feel that a lot of the world is so hostile to LGBTQ people still that A, I fear traveling in those places, but also B, I don't want to give my money to those places.
Yeah.
You know, places with hostile governments and hostile regimes. It's just no fun to travel in a world where
it makes it harder to enjoy it, knowing that in some way, like, you're supporting a government that doesn't, you know, believe in your right to be you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we are supportive of this movement. We support our brothers and sisters of color. We support all allies who are out there fighting this fight, and we're so hopeful, I think, that this will move the ball forward in a meaningful way and create some lasting change.
I hope so. Yeah. And I know that one of the things I've been feeling is some guilt about wanting release from it too. I like, sort of at the end of the day, I want to unplug and watch like Disney movies from the vault and, you know, have a drink and think about nothing. And so I've actually been trying to think of a lot of ways that I can keep my spirits up so that I can stay motivated and engaged in the movement. But that part is really hard. And so I've been really looking forward to recording this because I think that in some ways it's been a nice, fun relief. It's like a good chance to laugh.
And we have got a destination this week that we both love. Should we dive in?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So our destination this week is Portland.
Portland, Oregon. Yes.
Can I start by reading you a great quote that I found that I love? It was actually a quote that a friend of mine turned me on to, because I once asked him, I said, if someone forced you to make a choice, you have to live in either Seattle or Portland, which one would you live in?
Ooh.
And his response was fat, like a horse right out of the gate. He was like, oh, Portland, no question.
He went
on this big pro Portland tear, and then he shared this quote with me. Do you know who the author Edmund White is?
I don't. Who's that?
He's an LGBTQ author. He's probably in his early 80s now. He's very well known in queer literary circles, but he had this to say about the two cities. He said, mm-hmm. Seattle is the buff blonde athlete who gets all the attention and praise, but who is secretly jealous of his slovenly brother Portland, who lives happily in blissful obscurity. And it's not a perfect quote, but it sort of sums up that Portland-Seattle dichotomy, which is that Seattle feels wealthier, shinier, home to more tech, like big, more Fortune 500 companies. But isn't Portland who you'd rather go to bed with? I mean, Portland is just cooler and scrappier and
that's
more
awesome.
That's
the best way to say it. Yeah. And I think that's a great place to start, because Portland and Seattle do get looped in together as like the Northwest or the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like much to the chagrin of Portlanders who are like, you know, I think I was thinking of how you described Chicagoans about like, you know, always getting compared to LA and New York. I think Portlanders get that from Seattle. And it's so different. It's such a unique city that I'm glad we're talking about Portland to highlight some of what's good about it.
What do you love about Portland in general? Or what's your gut feeling when you're there?
Yeah. Oh, man. What a good question. I think one of the things that was most fun for me is that Portland lived up to the expectation. Before going there, I think like a lot of people, I was familiar with like Portlandia and some of the reputation that Portland gets. I mean, one of their city slogans is like, keep Portland weird. Mm-hmm. And they chose to describe themselves that way. And so that tells you something about their character. And it lived up to it. What my favorite and first impression, though, was I got to the airport. I took a taxi into the city and we drove into downtown. And most downtowns in the U.S., I think, are like, you know, you can kind of get lost in them and not really know where you are. It's like tall buildings. But the difference in Portland is that it's like hills and it's lined with trees. They're like, don't forget that we're in the Pacific Northwest and there are trees, you know, every foot and a half.
So pretty.
Yeah. And so the downtown area is actually really incredible. It's where some of the best hotels and restaurants are. It's like a great and wonderful place and vibe to hang out. And then when you go to a very different part of the city, that's where I think it lives up to some of like the Portlandia hype. And we'll talk about those places and why they're actually worth checking out. But I think I was so pleased to see that it wasn't necessarily a gimmick. Like, Portland is weird, and that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well said. I agree with you about their downtown. It's not dominated by glass and steel skyscrapers the way other cities are. It feels like the kind of downtown you want to walk around.
Yeah.
Especially since the neighborhood's adjacent to right downtown, like Chinatown and the Pearl District and all those neighborhoods that are sort of right there. And they don't have a huge downtown anyway. So yeah, it's fun to be downtown. Okay. I'm going to share my feelings about Portland.
Please do.
Fast.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're in an election year, Matt. this is a year when we will re-elect a president or elect a new president.
Mm-hmm.
So you're probably familiar with the term Veep stakes.
Uh-huh.
Right? Veep stakes. It's who is...
Yeah, the great lottery of who's going to be the vice president.
Yes, exactly. So we have a presumptive nominee on the Democratic side, Joe Biden, and there's all these questions looming large about who he's going to pick. All right? Uh-huh. So
I like can't wait to hear what you're about to say.
Well, Portland is always a city that I'm vetting.
What do you mean?
Right. Because you have, so like right now, Joe Biden, he's vetting Amy Klobuchar and Val Demings and Stacey Abrams and Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, right? If I were to ever leave Los Angeles, there is a short list of cities I would go to. And I'm always constantly vetting these cities in my mind. So when I'm there, I'm thinking, you know, how much is a one bedroom? Where would I want to live? Is there a great donut shop? Is there a great corner bar?
It's sort of like daydreaming about the city as a possible home.
Is there but I'm vetting it. So Portland is on my Veep stakes short list.
Wow.
Like it's one of those five cities where when I'm there, I'm in that mode where I'm trying to do a deep dive because I'm like I'm trying to get like granular with it. Really off the beaten path because I'm like I could live here, Portland, and so I need to know.
So
these
you
things.
Are somebody so, who travels a lot. Why Portland? Why is it on the short list?
You know what? Portland always feels like autumn to me. Portland just gives me that autumn feeling. And it is partly the weather. But although it's weird, San Francisco gives me a spring feeling. Like in San Francisco, because it's sort of damp and kind of wet there all the time, like it just kind of has this like...
Yeah.
And you would think, doesn't Portland remind you of that as well? But I guess Portland just has more of a... I'm born and raised in the Midwest and sort of like a Midwest in early October vibe. I get that vibe a lot in Portland. By the way, I should say I've gotten it in summer too. I've gone to Portland, by the way, in the middle of summer and it's been gusty and cold and people always shrug their shoulders and say, that's Portland.
Yeah.
But there's something... I find the city romantic. I find it welcoming. It has great restaurants, great cafe culture. I love the neighborhoods. I love that it feels like a real city, but that people have yards and people have front porches and, you know, people aren't, you know, they're not living in shoeboxes the way they are in other cities. So there's a lot and we'll get, I mean, once we start to get into the guts of Portland, which it sounds like we're ready to do, you know, we can talk about specifically the things we love.
Before we get to that, I want to read you two fun facts and a pro tip for Portland.
Let's hear them. So
fun fact is that Portland has more coffee shops, strip clubs, and bookstores per capita than anywhere else in the US.
Wait, coffee shops? Strip clubs
and bookstores
and bookshops.
Yeah.
What a funny trifecta. Right?
Yeah. I asked a friend and she was like, oh, everybody's got like their favorite strip club and their favorite coffee shop. Like it's, there's barely a bridge between the two.
Yeah. It makes me wonder if there's a day, like is it a Portland day to wake up, get coffee in the morning, spend your afternoon, you know, browsing through a neighborhood bookstore and then end the night at a strip club? Is that a Portland thing to do? I'm sure I've done it.
Yeah.
I do. I think I've done that.
Right. It's an annual holiday. It's October 1st my next fun fact though is that it is also home to the world's smallest public park.
Is that right?
It is right. It's called Mills End Park and it's 2.5 feet long. It's literally like a small, small, small brick wall that's a circle. And in the middle of that circle is one small, it looks like the Charlie Brown Christmas tree. It's like one tiny tree with four branches or whatever. It's on the east side of downtown along the Willamette River.
Willamette.
Yes, thank you. Willamette River.
Yeah. So wait, is it a park you can step on? It's a wall?
No, it's like a planter. It's like a 2.5 foot long planter. No, it's in the middle of the street and it's like a small, small wall. And in the middle of that wall is a tiny Charlie Brown looking Christmas tree.
Okay. So you can't stand in this park.
right.
Okay.
You go and look at it, but it's the world's smallest public park. And if you try to look it up right now, it says that it's closed, which I love because you can hardly step over it. You could do a plank over the whole thing. They're like, it's closed. Don't visit.
Yeah, that is so funny that COVID happened and they closed all the public parks. They took the padlocks out and bolted, right? Like put caution tape
the
over
one
that
branch,
2.5 feet.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And lastly, my pro tip is if you're in, I think this applies to all the Pacific Northwest, but certainly in Portland, only tourist losers use umbrellas. It is a land of like Columbia outerwear. And you would, I think locals would rather stand outside in the rain and get dumped on for 40 minutes than be seen with an umbrella. So it's a dead giveaway that you're a tourist if you use one.
Yeah, that's interesting. Would you still use one?
Oh, man, I don't know. It's a war between my desires to be dry and my desires to impress people.
Right? Okay, while we're talking about top Portland things or things that we associate with Portland. Okay, Voodoo Donuts, yay or nay? Let's just have the conversation right now.
Big fan. Yeah.
You are. So yeah. I'm a nay on Voodoo.
Ooh, tell me.
Oh, controversy. You know what? So I first went there with a friend of mine. We were on a road trip. We were actually road tripping. He was road tripping the entirety of the U.S. West Coast, meaning Los Angeles. So maybe not San Diego, or maybe he did start in San Diego, all the way up to Vancouver.
Mm, cool trip.
I joined him in San Francisco, and we went together from San Francisco to Seattle. We stopped in Portland. We went to Voodoo Donuts. I think I'd already been there once before, sometime before that. He ordered up like 10 donuts before we got on the road.
Spread.
Yeah. And his rationale was, let's just taste them all, eat our way through it. We'll throw out whatever. We're here. Why not? Yeah. So I agree with him. And it's not that I dislike Voodoo Donuts. It's that I don't think it's worth the hype. First of all, there's another donut chain to come out of Portland named Blue Star. Have you been to Blue Star?
I have been to Blue Star.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think Blue Star, which, full disclosure, there are locations here in Los Angeles now, and there's one down the street from me here in Silver Lake where I live. I think Blue Star is the far superior donut. I get it. Voodoo is fun. It's kind of funky. They take frosting. They throw some Fruit Loops on top and call it a donut or do whatever. But I don't think, the last time I was in Portland, I stayed actually at this great little hotel around the corner called the Society Hotel. Which sort of, for the record, is a budget-oriented hotel where everybody has their own room, but there's shared bathrooms on the floor, so it's European style. And there might even be some bunk rooms, too. But it's like cheap chic, and there's a great rooftop with like expansive views of downtown. And then the ground floor has a coffee shop, which is so typical in hotels these days. But I was staying there, and at night, it's one of the, Voodoo is one of the places where people are lined up, but you know, when they're drunk or wanting to, and I couldn't imagine myself standing in that line for those donuts. I'm not going to wait. I would walk in there again if there was no line and I was waking up and I craved donuts and it was the place right around the corner. But I'm a Blue Star guy, but let's hear your,
I respect your choice. I think what you're not going to find is that I've got I'm at war between Blue Star and Voodoo. I'm like pro donuts. So that's my, that's my stance. And I'm here for the gimmick of it. You know what I mean? Like you can order a big box and you can buy, have you seen the coffin that they sell? It's like a small coffin where you can get, you know, 20 or 30 donuts or however many come in it. And you like, I'm here for the gimmick of it. The donuts are fun. They're tasty. They're sugary and bright and colorful. And yeah, it's a blast. I don't know. It would take a lot for me to not like a donut place. I think you're right, though, that I don't know if I would wait like an hour to two, but if you're smart, you order ahead. You like get a delivery service, or you task grab at that or something. You know what I mean?
Can you do that?
I'm sure. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. There are a lot of people who love Voodoo who don't love hour and a half long lines. And so I'm sure solutions have come up. Yeah. Well, let me give a shout out to one other a bakery, which is called Twisted Croissant. And they are the first time that I ever heard about the cruffin. Do you know what a cruffin is?
No, I have no idea. I know the cronut.
Yeah. So it's the twisted sister, I guess, of the cronut. It's the cruffin. What do you think a cruffin is?
It's a croissant muffin.
Good for you. So it's the first time I heard about that. So it's in the shape of a muffin, but it's all flaky croissant dough and it's, you know, the little garnish on top. And it's incredible. Super tasty. But, you know, I think they're starting to get some traction. It's one of those places that like makes a batch in the morning and then they sell out. So if you want, like, go on a weekday, go grab a couple cruffins for you and some friends. Excuse me. Yeah, cruffins. You got me twisted between cronuts and cruffins. They sell cruffins, and it's called Twisted Croissant, and it's great.
Twisted Croissant.
Yep.
Awesome. Okay, so other big Portland question. What do you think of Salt and Straw?
That's a good one. I like Salt and Straw a lot. I mean, I first tried them in Los Angeles, so I didn't actually know that they were affiliated with Portland. They've obviously,
me too.
Yeah, they've obviously gotten much bigger and expanded a ton. I think it's good. That's another one that I'm like, I'll wait. I would wait like, you know, 10, 15 minutes to get it. I wouldn't wait an hour and a half, but their flavors are really good. I like that a lot of them are like vegan or vegan friendly. They're really creative with like being seasonal and using local ingredients and stuff. And I think that's really fun to find an ice cream because that's not something you would get, you know, getting a pint at the grocery store. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, yeah, I'm a soft serve guy, so I love soft serve ice cream, and they are not soft serve ice cream,
right.
But I really appreciate Salt and Straw. I feel like they're the Jenny's of the Pacific Northwest. Do you know Jenny's?
Jenny's, no.
Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams. They're based out of, I want to say, Columbus, Ohio. And so I first discovered them when I was still living in Chicago, and it's the same. It's the same. It's a similar vibe. It's, you can buy a pint to go, and it's probably like $9 or $10. But the flavors are like, it's like a, you know, it's like a restrained version of Ben and Jerry's, right? It's like, you know how Ben and Jerry's, everything's like super loud and in your face and fun, right? But Ben and Jerry's is like the real deal. You stick your spoon in there and you get like a hunk of pretzel and brownie, and that's what Jenny's, and that's what Salt and Straw is like, right? So if Salt and Straw has a flavor like, you know, biscuit and jam, it means you're gonna stick
it's
your spoon in there
full,
and come up
with.
And so I would say thumbs up to Salt and Straw. And by the way, speaking of biscuits and jam, have you been to Pine State Biscuits in Portland?
I have not. Tell me about it.
Put it on your list. Mm-hmm. So it's a local biscuit place. So famed for their biscuits, but really famous because you can go there and you can get breakfast sandwiches made with biscuits, right? Yeah. So you can get, you know, scrambled eggs and bacon on a biscuit, or, you know, I'm sure there's sweet versions as well. And in fact, there's now a couple locations in Portland, and even one I saw in Reno. And so I was like, ooh, good to know. Granted, I'll probably be in Portland before I'm in Reno. Like, why did I just say it was good to know there's a version in Reno? When am I ever in Reno? That made no sense. And I didn't, like, until it came out of my, like, until I heard myself saying it, I was like, why am I?
What's the demonym for somebody? Like, what do you call somebody from Reno? Is it a Renoan?
A
Renoite?
Good question.
What do you think it is?
Yeah, a Renownian.
A Renownian. Hold on, I gotta look.
I mean, they're definitely Nevadans. We know that.
Yeah,
but Pine State Biscuits is one of those places where you might incur a little bit of a line because it's, you know, on a Saturday or Sunday morning when Portlanders are in brunch mode, you're probably gonna have to join that queue. But I think it's pretty tasty and worth your time.
Yeah,
what?
Good rec. It's called a Renoite. Somebody from Reno is called a Renoite.
Matt, good sleuthing. You put on your Sherlock Holmes hat and you found that out. Okay, what do you think of, and do you have a favorite food cart?
Oh, you know what? I will say I actually haven't gotten to take full advantage of the food carts, but I know their story well. I think a lot of cities have food carts. But food carts are like a staple of downtown Portland. And there's been drama because recently they've had to shift from a spot that they'd been for years and years and years because of new construction that's happening downtown. Mm. But Portland is like famous and renowned for its food carts. So will you tell us some about it?
Well, so the funny thing about food carts, right? And first of all, yeah, they are downtown. They are everywhere in Portland. And they're called, right? When you find a grouping of them together, they're called food pods.
Mm.
Right? So these like a
like
food
a murder
cart
of crows, but food
yes,
pods.
like a food cart park. And so, you know, there's Cartlandia, there's Rose City Food Park, there's Hawthorne Asylum. I think what's challenging about food carts is that if you're a local, if you're living in Portland, you probably have your 10 favorite. But if you visit and you go to one of these pods or food cart parks with a local, you just go and you try a bunch of things and you go on your merry way. It's rare that I think to bookmark, oh, this was the food cart I went to. I need to remember this exact place where I had this amazing Korean barbecue. But there is one, the very first one I went to, I still remember it because it was such, and I'll be curious. I would love to get some Portland mail on this. Like, I'd be curious to see if Portlanders, you know, give this one a thumbs up or a thumbs down. But have you heard of a place called Flavor Spot?
Flavor Spot. Is that Guy Fieri's younger brother, Flavor Town?
If it was, I would not. By the way, I just reread what's his name? I can't remember, but the New York Times critic who wrote the probably the most famous restaurant review in the world, which was of Guy Fieri's restaurant that he had in Manhattan in Times Square.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
a bunch
where
of
he
years.
Highlighted donkey sauce and how there's meat on everything.
Oh my God. So great. But anyway, so Flavor Spot serves Dutch tacos.
Mmm, cool. Wait, what's a Dutch taco?
So it's like a mini waffle, but then you put sweet or savory food in it and you fold it up and eat it like a taco.
Mmm, cool.
So yeah, it's like a taco and a waffle. And when I had it there, it was probably 10, 12 years ago. I mean, I've been to Portland a bunch of times over the years, and I've I think I went back one time, but I thought that was an unusual flavor combination. I thought the texture was really great. I was really smitten with it. And so after I first went there, I bookmarked that one. I was like, flavor spot, don't forget that. And so that's always been on my radar, but I've been to many food carts since then. I just couldn't tell you the specific names anymore.
Yeah. You're like, I just remember this wonderful kebab, but I don't remember where it was from. I'd be curious to hear how many place. I feel like Portland is a place that's ripe with restaurants that started as food carts. You know, that's a thing. Like a lot of New York restaurants will be pop-ups from local food fairs. I feel like those exist at every city, but Portland is probably full of them. And I'm thinking now that I don't know which ones they are, and I'm wondering if there are any of the places that we're recommending.
Yeah, that's a good question. I have no idea. Like, I could see Pine State Biscuits. I'm not saying this is true, but that's the kind of place that could easily have started out as a food cart.
Yeah, I love that feel. I would like always gravitate towards a place like that. So good rec. I would love to talk about like solo travel in general. And I'll tell you why I bring that up. I think because you're a very good solo traveler and it's something I'm practicing and working on. I would love to hear your pro tips. But Portland was one of the first cities that I really did that and like challenged myself to explore and talk to people and go check out restaurants and just like put myself into some of the discomfort of exploring a city when you don't have a plus one, which is, I think, a real challenge for a lot of people. And I'm somebody who loves like craft cocktails. I love speakeasies. I'm here for the gimmick of it. But what I'm really here for is like a really good drink. I'm down to pay $15 to $20 for like one good cocktail and feel the ambiance of a place. And so it's usually a good starting point for me because when I get to a city, I'll immediately look that up and go through, you know, blog posts and articles where people debate like good craft cocktails. And so I found a couple places that really fit the bill for that. And of them, one place that I really want to highlight is called the Teardrop Lounge. And you walk into the front door and firstly, like the windows, almost the whole side of the building is opened up. It was like a beautiful day outside. And so it was all opened up and there was some seating in the outdoor area and, you know, a great breeze flowing in. But it's called the Teardrop Lounge because most of the inside is just one big bar and it's in the shape basically of a big teardrop and the bartenders sit inside of it. And so it's, you know, it's almost like a circle where they're back to back slinging drinks and talking to people. And the bartenders were super charming. They were really good at what they did. You can tell when a bartender is good because even when it's wall to wall and they're busy, they never feel like they don't have time for you. Even though they're making 19 drinks at once and talking to you about your grandma or whatever, like, that's such a sign of expertise as a bartender, and I always appreciate that fact. But this was a place that I wandered into. I looked it up. I sat down, and I ordered an amazing drink. And then I was like, okay, now what? And I was looking for, and if, you know, the people around me wanted to start conversations, everybody was either with somebody or sort of bunkered down in their chair. And I read a little bit. I looked around. I talked to the bartender. I looked on my phone. And, you know, at a certain point, I was like, this is amazing, but I don't think I want to stay for two because I'm a little bit bored. Like I can't engage. And that is a real problem for me. So what are some of your like maybe pro tips or thoughts on solo travel?
Yeah. I mean, I travel alone all the time. First of all, I think Portland is a great city for solo travel.
Yeah.
In part for, okay, it's an easy city to get around. So if you have a car when you're in Portland, which I probably have had every time I've been there, it's such a quick city to zip around. And by the way, I mean, we can talk about this later, but it's also a great city to get out of if you want to go to, you know, like drive the Columbia River Gorge, go to Sauvie Island, go down to wine country. Go out to Cannon Beach. I mean, there's so many amazing day trips from Portland. But when you're within the city of Portland, it's an easy city to get around by car or by Uber. Mm-hmm. Last time I was there, I got on a scooter, like a Lime scooter, and took those everywhere. I know, like, people, like my mom, if she heard that, she would freak out.
Most
of my friends freak out. But Portland just felt like an easy city to just like hop on one. And
yeah, it's totally accessible.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's full. Portland is full of locations where I'll leave a restaurant and like the bar I want to go to is like 9 blocks away. So I'm like, I don't really want to walk that, but I don't really need to take an Uber to that. What's the compromise? So first of all, I do have a leg up on the solo travel thing because I am on the apps. And you're not on the apps.
What does that mean?
Right. The dating apps, the hookup apps.
Right.
So
I'm
one
not on
thing,
those.
Right, because you're a married gentleman.
Uh-huh.
And one thing I find this very useful is if I get to a new city, I can get on one of these apps. And of course, I'm talking about the gay apps, right? Like Scruff. Mm-hmm. And Grindr's another one, but I'm not on Grindr. But I can go on. And then you, when you arrive in a new city, first of all, people always want to talk to you because they've never seen your photo pop up before. And people love visitors. And you can start you can start asking around. Oh, I'm staying at this hotel. What's a good place to eat? What's a good place to go have a drink? What's a good... And then you suddenly get local recommendations from the locals from the comfort of your phone, which is really fun and awesome.
Yeah.
Another trick I like to do when I'm a solo traveler, and in fact, I put my money where my mouth is to this theory. This was when I was working for Time Out Chicago years ago. We were doing our road trips issue, and I came up with this idea. I mean, I had done it myself, but I pitched it to the magazine, and they loved it so much. They were like, "Yeah, let's do a road trip based around this idea." And here's the idea: so you go somewhere, but you go somewhere with no plans, and so you just book your hotel, and at the hotel, you ask the concierge or the check-in agent, where should I go for dinner? And you let them make that decision for you. And then when you get to dinner, you say to the person, you say to your server or the, you know, the person, if you're sitting at the solo at the bar, where should I go for a drink afterwards?
Yeah.
And then you let them, and then when you get to that bar, you say to the bartender or someone you meet at the bar, I'm visiting from out of town, where should I go tomorrow for breakfast? And you let locals decide your whole weekend for you. So A, not only are you going to great places, but it also becomes this conversation piece.
Yeah.
Right?
You say that's like, oh, such this a is good so idea.
Yeah. So what you're saying is you're like, you know, when people say, oh, how did you choose this bar? And you're like, oh, well, my server recommended it to me. And so I'm gonna let you now choose where I go for breakfast tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then
oh,
at breakfast,
what a good idea.
Yeah, you tell your breakfast server, where should I go? What's a good museum to go to? And you just keep playing that game the whole time. And so not only have I done this before, but I actually pitched this to this magazine and we did a whole road trips issue based on it. So
what a good idea. Well done.
Yeah, where all the writers were forced to do that. So that's another fun thing.
You know what I love about that is I'll often ask people, like, what are some of your favorite places in Portland? And they'll, you know, kind of humdrum through a list. But what you've done is basically is like, pick the one place. Where am I going tomorrow? Or where should I go for breakfast tomorrow? And so it forces you to get like a single recommendation, which I think is great. It's like a great constraint.
Yeah. And I also think the solo traveler is at an advantage in Portland because it's a city full of people who have moved there from elsewhere.
Yeah. City of transplants. So, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's a city of transplants. And I think transplants are generally, you know, they're outsiders themselves or they were at one point. They're eager to talk. They're eager, you know, they might have only moved there recently too. So they're still in that excite, you know, excited to share things with people phase. So I think it's a great, I think Portland's a unique, perfect city for the solo traveler.
Actually in some ways fits in with a lot of the major cities, which is where like people move to the major cities for the dream of that city. You move to LA to like make it, you move to New York to be a part of the big city. Like you've got a vision of it. And I think a lot of people go to Portland to live the dream of Portland. So it is sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy that all these transplants come and they keep, you know, they keep Portland weird in spite of not being from there.
It's like what Fred Armisen said in the very first episode of Portlandia, which is Portland is where young people go to retire. Okay, so
exactly right.
Tell me, let's talk about some hotels. So I mentioned the Society Hotel. I want to name check one other one,
please,
which is everybody knows the Ace Hotel now, right? There's an Ace Hotel in New York. The one in Palm Springs is so famous for its like weekend pool parties and its millennial vibe. But the original one is in Seattle, and that one almost feels like a hostel. I mean, it's not a hostel, but it's really
like it's been eclipsed by the Aces and all the other cities, so now it's really dingy.
It has. You would be in culture shock if you went to the Ace in Seattle.
Yeah.
It's in Belltown, expecting the Ace vibe. But the one in Portland, which I stayed at probably 12 or 13 years ago, it had just opened. It was the first one that feels like the Ace we know today, where you walk in and there's, you know, vintage records everywhere and, you know, maybe someone at a turntable and the lobby is seamlessly integrated with the check-in agents and you know, it's the kind of place where people are, it's like the lobby had become a social scene, right? Like a social scene among like young hipsters, which I hadn't really seen in a hotel before at that point. This was like 2008.
Yeah.
And I remember
all the newly retired people who just moved to Portland. They're all hanging out in the lobby.
Right. But it was. I mean, keep in mind, this was years ago. So the Ace brand has really grown up, and it also, by the way, gotten a lot pricier. But it was, really, and there was a vintage, you know, like one of those photo booths where you can get the like strip of four. But it was just really like energetic and fun. I remember like thinking like, oh, this is its own scene. Like I'm not used to this. Like, you know, going to a Marriott or going to a Hilton or whatever. I was like, this is, and they had a Stumptown coffee. Speaking of name checking famous Portland things, and fun fact about me, I don't drink regular coffee. I don't know if you know that.
You a decaf person?
Yeah, because regular coffee makes me cry. So like I'm that sensitive to regular coffee that like I get so anxious and weepy. I had a Stumptown cup of coffee and it was like, to me, like being on a bad drug trip.
Yeah.
Like that's how strong. And I think this would have been a cup of decaf. Like, and it, but maybe they,
and
maybe
like,
they
and
gave
that's
me
when
regular,
I ran my first marathon.
Yeah, exactly. So I was so wired by Stumptown coffee. I've not had a cup of it since then. I was like, nope,
which I think
strong.
Is a, for the coffee drinkers out there. That's a testament to that. You know, it's the good stuff.
Well, okay, I think hotel shout out from you. Yeah,
the description you just gave of hotels is so wonderful, and I think what you've done is actually described Portland's hotel scene. You know, most of its hotel scene in a quick little bit. Portland to me is the land of like cool boutique hotels, mm-hmm. and it is almost a shame because there are so many of them. There's such a good surplus that I think they end up competing with one another and sort of get lost in the mix, which is a shame. But Portland is like, I think it's a pleasure to hang out at the lobby bars to go and sit in. Like almost everyone has a whiskey selection and a big library and, mm-hmm. you know, like boutique decorated rooms and a really friendly staff. And that's true of so many of them. But don't let that, you know, deter you from going to explore. And so I want to give a shout out to a couple. One thing I will say is there's a hotel group called the Provenance Group. They mm-hmm. came under fire. I don't know if you remember this last year because their owner is on like Trump's cabinet. I forget his name, but he's one of Trump's appointees. And so if you can put that aside, don't hold that necessarily against the hotels because they're really wonderfully designed and really incredible places to visit. So they've got a whole group of hotels, but there are two that I want to call out called the Dossier and the Woodlark. And they call them like male and female concepts of each other. Mm-hmm. So the Dossier is the male concept, if you'll forgive the, you know, that binary.
The gender stereotyping?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or the descriptions that I'm about to give, if you can decouple those. I just like that they're sort of opposite concepts of a same, you know, similar idea. So the Dossier is the male version, quotes, and it's more like rich woods and slate gray and forest green, and every room is decorated with beautiful art. It really does feel like walking into like a boutique whiskey library out of a TV show or something. Mm-hmm. And then the Woodlark is the female concept, and it's more like the walls are white and the furniture is like a sage or a sea green, and it uses lighter wood. They've got an amazing bar lounge in there called the Abigail Hall. And so I love those two, and they're right across the street from each other also. So if one of them is booked, you can sort of just pick the other and enjoy it. And then
nice.
Yeah. And then the other hotel I want to call out is the Jupiter Hotel, which is in a different part. It's on, you know, closer to the east side across the water.
I know the Jupiter.
Oh, good. Yeah, Jupiter is awesome. It's do you know their story at all?
No, I've never stayed at the Jupiter. I've only been to the Douglas Fir Bar, which in itself is an iconic Portland experience.
Yeah, yeah. I think I forget if it's Doug Fir Bar, or Doug Fir Lounge, but it's one of the best.
Doug Fir.
Yeah, Doug Fir. It's one of the best and coolest music venues in all of Portland.
Totally.
And
yeah.
It's an awesome bar as well. And that is, you know, in the guts of the Jupiter Hotel. So the Jupiter Hotel, they bought like a, you know, a rundown motel, and it used to be in a place of Portland called Heroin Alley, which tells you something. Mm-hmm. Which tells you something about it. Probably wasn't, you know, real estate prices were low, and they totally gutted it and transformed it, and so now it's just like an awesome boutique upscale spot that's like, it's a real pleasure to hang out. I think a lot of people pick hotel because it's like a place to stay, and then they go out and explore the city. Jupiter is like a real pleasure, and there's a lot to do, so I definitely recommend that as well.
Nice. And have you heard of Caravan? Tiny home hotel?
What is that?
Well, I've not been to it, but it's on my radar. It's just a collection of tiny homes.
Yeah.
That are it's a hotel, but it's made up of little tiny homes that you can stay at.
Oh, how fun.
And it's in the middle of Portland. It's not like out on the outskirts or in the woods or something, the way you know, like where you'd expect a tiny house to be.
Yeah.
It's just in the middle of the city. It's a little tiny home hotel called Caravan. So I can't vouch for it because I've not stayed there, but it's on my radar. I'm like, I might have to try that out next time I'm in Portland.
Yeah.
Okay. So first of all, another top attraction that people love is, of course, Powell Books.
Yes.
And it's every bit, you know, worth it, and you should go there and you should support it. And I'm sure coming out of, you know, COVID, it's more reason than ever to support it. But, and it's funny, you and I don't really get granular about shops and places to go, but there's one store in Portland I love. Uh-huh. I visited it first because a friend of mine that I knew in San Francisco owned and ran it at the time. I assume she still does. I don't know that.
Yeah.
But when I met her in San Francisco, she was going by the name of Ferris. She doesn't go by that anywhere. She goes by her original name. She's from Portland. But when I knew her in San Francisco, she was like, she worked the door at the bar called, this bar called The Stud, which sadly is it's one of the oldest gay bars in San Francisco, and it will not be reopening after COVID, which is so super sad. But that's another story for another time. I first met her because she was working the door, and she was like, I'm having a birthday at a gay bingo parlor at a church. Like, come join me for bingo. Right. So we did. And at the time, I think she was like a stripper, and she worked the door, and she would always like take me out to fancy meals. And her whole thing was that she loved everything vintage. So she lived in a little studio that didn't have a bathroom. She had to like go down to like the health club or whatever to use the bathroom. But it was like a little artist studio, and she collected vintage everything.
Yeah.
So she was obsessed with like Eric, like Chips and Eric Estrada. And she was actually on Real Sex HBO as I have a secret fantasy. And it was like being pulled over by like a California highway patrolman who looked like Eric Estrada. And I actually, whatever. So, and she loved the Brady Bunch. She went on Judge Judy claiming that her best friend like broke her Brady Bunch board game or lunchbox or something. Like she's like,
I'm convinced you're making this person up.
I am like, not. She went on Classic Concentration, which is the game show, the other game show that Alex Trebek had. But anyway, so it's no surprise that when she moved back to Portland, she opened a vintage shop because she loves vintage everything point where she and her husband would go to like estate sales and like one of them would like fake a heart attack so that everyone would run and then the other person could go and grab all the good stuff. I'm not kidding. She like does this. So she has a shop in Portland called Smut.
Uh-huh.
Where the window is all blacked out.
Of course she does.
It's called Smut, but it stands for so many unique treasures. And if you go to Portland, say hi. Her name is Marcy.
Uh-huh.
I knew her as Ferris, but her name is Marcy. I don't know if she still owns it. I know the store is still open.
Yeah.
So that's my boutique shout out.
What a great and incredible name for an antique shop.
All right, you go.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Powell's City of Books. I think a lot, you know, it's a famous bookstore. And I would say it is, I don't think very many locals go to Powell's. It is built for the tourists, but it is like worth supporting and worth checking out. I think their claim is that they've got, you know, miles of books in there. And they really do. It's worth checking out. But if you do, if you want to like check out other bookstores, because Portland does have, one of the largest numbers of bookstores, you can check out Annie Bloom's Books, which is in, you know, down in Multnomah, and then New Renaissance Books, which is in the Northwest District. Two other great bookstores to check out.
Yeah. And as we said before, Portlanders' favorite things, coffee shops,
coffee bookstores, and strip clubs.
Oh yeah. And I'll recommend a strip club. It's called Stag PDX, but it's for guys. It's for gay guys. it's for gentlemen.
Does that discredit it?
No, not at all. I'm just saying that I'm not necessarily recommending it to you.
Yeah.
but it is a great bar. And another bar I love, by the way, is called Alto, which it's AALTO. And some friends took me there, and it's one of those funny Portland bars, right? Because I think it's a queer bar, but first and foremost, it's a lumberjack bar, right? Like it's just like a Portland bar, right? Like it's a gay bar, but like everyone's wearing flannel. Everyone has like weird piercings and tattoos.
Right,
everyone's
cool.
Like everyone's 10 times cooler than I am. So I think it's the kind of bar you would actually really dig. Like Alto's a really fun one. and then I do want to shout out, like when you're in Portland, get out of town. Have you been to Sauvie Island?
No, what is that?
It's really beautiful. It's a river island just outside of town. So it's on the Columbia River, but I think part of it is where the Willamette meets the Columbia River, but on the banks of the Columbia River, there's all these beaches. You can go there for the day. There's like urban winery. There's berry picking. That's super fun. I've gone to a beach on the other side of town, away from Sauvie Island, called Rooster Rock. And that's a fun one, but it's like such a Portland experience. It's like, even in like July, you have to trudge through like a foot of like sludge and swamp and water to get there. But once you do, Portlanders are like, isn't this great? Isn't this amazing? Whereas I'm from Los Angeles, where a beach is just sandy and beautiful. You just park your car.
Yeah.
You know, you're like in your
little
tank.
You've got to work for it.
But you have to work for it. And of course, I do think that in the city, a typical tourist attraction that's really lovely, especially in season, is the International Rose Test Garden and Portland Japanese Garden.
Yeah, you beat me to it. That is really a pleasure. I, on my solo trip there, I stayed downtown and I walked to the Rose Garden, and it was like a 30-minute walk, and I really enjoyed it. I put in music and just walked over there, caught a hill at the end. And then you get to the Rose Garden, which is free. You can just wander into it. Mm-hmm. And it felt like that scene in Alice in Wonderland, you know, where she gets shrunk and there's all these giant colorful flowers dancing around her. No, of course you haven't. You haven't seen Moana, so you don't know what I'm talking about. But in Alice in Wonderland, for everybody who's listening, they will know that's what it feels like. And it just was like, it's a magical place. I don't know how else to describe it, but it's just, you know, like lines and rows of different colored roses. And what I did, it's forgive the expression, but I stopped and smelled the roses. And I did it. And yeah. Almost everyone that I liked the color of, I stopped and took a smell of it. And I was like, that is like, that's tasty. And I would do it again. So I wrote down the names of some of the flowers so I could look them up later.
And I feel like, you also have a great view of the city from that garden, right?
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah, it's like on the top of a hill, so it does look over it. And it's right next to, or I guess it's in the same, I think it's Forest Park is the name for like the larger park that this garden exists in. And they also have the Japanese garden. Have you been there?
Yeah, and I had mentioned that I had said the International Rose Test Garden / Portland Japanese Garden. Which is lovely and nice to walk through and just reflective and peaceful and
super peaceful. Yeah, that one is not free. Great, it's not super expensive. I think I paid $10 or $15 to get it, but I spent like two or 3 hours there just slowly wandering through. It was really
so
wonderful.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, during my solo trip, I treated myself to half a day of just being outside and enjoying the Pacific Northwest, and that's a great place to start.
Yeah, and we should say, too, that before we move on to our next segment that, you know, Portland is also a wonderful city of neighborhoods. So do get outside the downtown and go to Mississippi, that area, go to the Alberta Arts District. You know, these are the kind of neighborhoods where you don't need to spend all day in them, but you walk the strip. There's a great bookstore. There's a great brunch place. There's a great cafe. There's funky thrift stores. You'll see Portlanders, you know, doing their thing on week. And it's such a fun city.
Yeah. The last place I will say before we move on is a spot called Homebody. And it's a shout out. She was like a friend of a friend, but I would say she's a friend now. Her name is Max. And she runs this is her brick and mortar called Homebody. But her business is also called Roots and Crowns. And I don't know how better to describe her other than that she's a witch. And I mean that in the best way, which is that she's like a certified forager, and she makes tinctures and potions and lotions and candles, and like everything is from scratch. And it's one of the stores you go in, you just go like, oh, that's good. Like you can wander around in this store. So please go support. It's called Homebody.
Homebody. How cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Are you ready to learn a little bit more about Portland?
I am ready, and I've been waiting all week for this.
So we're going to move into a segment called What Happened Here, which is where we dive into a story or a little bit of history about the destination. And so I'm up this week, and I'm going to tell you about Decemberists Day.
Named for the band The Decemberists.
Named for the band Decemberists. Good for you. Yeah. So I'm going to start just by telling you a little bit about The Decemberists, who are a band that I love. And I think that this is great because it is talking about a band that I love. The Decemberists are sort of like Portland darlings. But it's also a story that I think perfectly represents the weirdness of Portland and the love that the locals have for this city, which is even more wonderful.
Awesome.
So the Decemberists formed in like 2000 after the lead singer, Colin Molloy, who is easily the most famous member of it. And I think, you know, it really is centered around him. He moved to Portland in the late 90s to try to make it in the music scene. Because since like the 60s, Portland has had a super strong underground music scene. Are you familiar with the pop bands New Shoes or the Kingsmen?
I am familiar with neither.
Man, I was really hoping you'd pick that up. They're not, you know, they're not Ariana Grande, but they were famous for their time. So the Kingsmen were in like the 60s to 80s, and they had a song called Wish You Were Here, but their most famous one is Louie Louie. And Portland also had a super vibrant, like hardcore punk scene. And one fun story, Courtney Love, who I think is most famous for like being Kurt Cobain's partner.
Yes.
She is a really accomplished musician herself and was really active in the punk scene in Portland. And she met Kurt Cobain at the now defunct Satyricon Club, which was a popular venue at the time.
They met in Portland?
Yeah.
I absolutely did not know that.
Yeah. Cool fun fact. And big shout out to Portland. Colin Molloy moves to Portland in the late 90s. He's working at like a pizza parlor, playing open mics to basically empty rooms. Like only the bartender would really be there to listen. Really dismal stuff. And this is really important because I think at this time, Molloy developed his eclectic style, which is really at the heart of the Decemberists. He was quoted as saying, "When I was in that position with nobody to appeal or scare away, I thought I might as well do whatever I want to do," and created his new thing, which became the Decemberists.
And so wait, the Decemberists then formed in early 2000s.
Yeah. Yeah. They met in 2000.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. Keep going. Yeah. Sorry.
Which is wild to say that that's 20 years ago, but
yeah,
it's 20 years ago.
And wait, also too, I know the Decemberists. I don't know them well. I listened to them again, like 15 years ago when they were starting to hit. I remember downloading some songs and being into them and excited. Are they still active? I do not know.
They are still active. Yeah, okay. They are still active. And I'll get to their most recent releases and what they're up to now, but they are still active. But I think that you're right that they, you know, they built a following early, and that was in the early 2000s.
Okay, keep going.
Yeah, so in Portland, Colin Molloy met the four other bandmates, and they called themselves the Decembrists, which I learned is after the Decembrist Revolt in St. Petersburg, Russia, where the Russian military rose up basically against Tsar Nicholas, and like, because he was assuming the throne. What a wild deep cut to name your band after.
Matt, you think, just when you think you know, a Portland-based indie rock band.
They surprise you with their deep cut of history. Like, there's so many ways to name a band. Like, ABBA is the acronym of the members' first names. Like, Pearl Jam was named after Eddie Vedder's grandma. You know, there's
Wait,
so many.
Really? I don't want a sidebar there.
It's like his great grandma Pearl.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. You know the band Weezer? Like they were called Weezer because Rivers Cuomo had asthma in high school or when he was a kid and used to get made fun of. Like there's so many ways to name a band, and you chose a deep cut of a Russian revolt.
Let's start that podcast. Band entomologies. Okay,
that would be
going.
A good one. Yeah. So the members of Decembrists are Colin Molloy, who's lead singer and guitarist, Jenny Conley, who plays keyboards and accordion, Chris Funk, guitarist, Ezra Holbrook, who's the drummer, and Nate Query, who's the bassist. And okay. I say those single instruments, but it's worth noting that they each play like half a dozen instruments, like the bouzouki and the harmonica, the dobro, the hurdy-gurdy, the auto harp, the theremin, like instruments you've never seen played before. They incorporate them because, of course, they do. They're from Portland.
Yeah, which I love. I love when bands do that. And I also love multi instrumentalists.
Yeah, it's
like
infinitely
virtuoso
impressive.
Musicians.
Yeah, it's so impressive. So they've been described as quote lyrically rich and history indebted folk rock band. Again, it's so weird. Their music really focuses on, I would say, like obscure topics, but they talk a lot about history, about folklore, like obscure maritime knowledge. So a good example, I think, is their third album, which has a song about a widowed peddler, spies who fall in love, a pair of homeless runaways, and two men trapped inside the belly of a whale, which is actually an 8-minute sea shanty. It sounds like the Portland version of the SNL character Stefan, like a bit that he would
do. Yeah, yeah.
So other albums like The Crane Wife highlights a Japanese folktale where a man falls in love with a wounded crane and she turns into somebody beautiful. Like they wrote a whole album based on that.
They're a literary band.
They are for sure a literary band. Yeah. If you are into music that proves it's educated, Decembrists are your band. And so once they met, they started, you know, playing music and exploring together, and they began to play shows in and around Portland. And many of them were at McMiniman's venues. Are you familiar with what that is?
I don't think so.
McMiniman's, I won't spend too much time on this, but it's worth shouting out because it's like a Pac Northwest staple. It's a huge family-owned business, but there are 62 locations, and it's like pubs, hotels, theaters, concert venues, spas, event spaces. They basically do everything. They make their own beer, wine, and cider, and you can get like a passport for checking out and visiting these places.
Okay, this makes sense because it is sparked up. The name is familiar.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm most familiar with their hotels and their restaurants, but they also have event spaces. And so they've been a staple of the Pac Northwest for a long time. And some of their first shows were at McMiniman's event spaces. And so one of their first big breaks was playing like an hours long show, like too long. And it was basically in the hallway of what was the White Eagle Hotel, which is a McMiniman's venue. And what they did is they raised enough money to record their first EP the next day. And they recorded it in like 2 hours, which is lightning fast.
Yeah, super cool.
Yeah. So that EP, five songs EP, was super well reviewed. And a year later, they released their first full length album called Castaways and Cutouts. But it was still a really slow start. Like they kept playing shows. They had their biggest show was at another awesome venue called Lola's Room, and it was like 75 people. Like, you know, that was big for them at the time, but like certainly not by today's standards. And so since then, they've come a super long way. In 2015, they headlined the 3,000 capacity Keller Auditorium, which is in Portland, another incredible venue. And their 2011 album actually hit number one on the Billboard Top 200 charts, very briefly, but it did hit number one.
Blammo.
Yeah. So they've done a bunch of good stuff. And so I think to summarize all that, I would say like they're a cult favorite band who still to this day are like writing and touring. But throughout it all, they definitely hold true to their Portland roots. Like to date, they're one of the biggest bands to come out of Portland, and they're beloved there. And my feeling, again, is that because they're a great eclectic band who also embodies the weirdness of Portland, which I think we've described in full.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to tell you about Decembrists Day, which is a local holiday.
Okay, wait. The first question I have is when is it?
When is Decembrists Day? It is January 15th, and technically it's January 15th, 2015. And that is because that is the day that they released their seventh full-length album called What a Terrible World, What a Beautiful World. And the city of Portland honored them by giving them a local holiday, which is January 15th.
Oh, yeah. All right. So this isn't made up by like kooky, keep Portland weird locals. This is a city. This was made up by kooky, weird city officials.
Elected officials. It is a government ass holiday.
I love this. Yeah. All right. Let's hear about it.
Yeah. So there was a ceremony at City Hall and the band came and did a free performance. And before the band began to play, they unveiled this huge Decembrist themed quilt that was patched together with 50 squares from Portland artists and small businesses that who had ties to the band, including Salt and Straw and some other local businesses. But there were 50. And before this like lifetime achievement, they pulled out a quilt.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Don't you feel like Portland is one of those like 6 degree cities where it's like, of course, Salt and Straw is connected to Decembrists. Everyone's probably connected to everyone. Like, you know, everyone who's an artist in Portland probably knows everybody else.
They all slept on each other's couches or like, were, you know, spent their last dollar at this place. I'm sure. Yeah.
Yes.
So one local newspaper recommended celebrating this holiday by spending an hour waxing your Buick sized replica of an obscure Civil War battleship. Go glasses shopping in honor of Colin Molloy, who wears really, you know, identifiable glasses.
Oh,
or
fun.
Stand on your neighbor's lawn playing one of their songs called 16 Military Wives and the Bouzouki. It doesn't matter.
I know that song.
You do.
That's one of their, that's like one of their great songs.
It's an incredible song.
It's in my head now.
Good.
I love that
good,
song.
Good,
okay.
Good. Okay. So I'm going to read you the proclamation or like the decree, I guess, because it's almost a caricature of Portland. Are you ready for this?
Born ready.
Whereas Portland, Oregon is widely regarded as a community in which the myths and legends of our past intermingle with the peculiarities of the current citizenry, and whereas it is from the city of Portland that arose the indie rock ensemble known by its moniker from a quasi-obscure moment in Russian history, the Decembrists, and whereas the songwriting of Colin Molloy returns to our minds genres such as the Troubadour's Ballad, the Lonely Sailor's Sea Shanty, the Bitter Soldier's Lament, and other song forms from a halfway imagined history. And whereas the instrumental contributions of Chris Funk, Jenny Conley, Nate Query, and John Moen make every Decembrist songs a mingling of hope, perseverance, and other stalwart emotions associated with indie rock. And whereas the Decembrists thus embody the Portland values of passion, engagement, and communitarianism with the Portland aesthetic of homegrown, forthright, slightly hippie, and often bespectacled glory. Now, therefore, I, Charles Hales, the mayor of Portland, do hereby proclaim January 20th, 2015 to be Decembrist Day in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this day.
Wait, January 20th, not January 15th.
Did I say January 15th? Oh,
you did originally.
Forgive me. I was thinking 2015. It's January 20th, 2015.
I gotcha. So it's January 20th. And so every year, like, okay, first of all, I have so many questions. Is it still celebrated?
I hope so.
Okay, and is it celebrated on the 20th, or do you like celebrate it on the Saturday before if it falls on a Tuesday, you know?
Right, like as a government holiday, do you get that Monday off?
Right, exactly.
Right.
And by the way, do you really think the mayor is that eloquent that he wrote that? He's got a hipster speechwriter, don't you think?
Oh my God, who is like behind City Hall on a typewriter, like furiously going?
He must. He must.
I don't know. I want to give him credit for even acknowledging and being willing to read this decree in front of the people of Portland.
Well, and of all those things the mayor recommends you do on Decemberist Day, really, you're just going to stand on your... Wait, wasn't one of them stand in your yard and or whatever
play
and
the
sing?
Glockenspiel version of 16 Military Wives or whatever.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, that's what I would do. I'm not going to... What was one of them? Like wax your...
Wax your replica of the Civil War monument.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but like, I would really love to know if like the locals do anything else with this holiday.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it was like specifically 2015, I guess, because that was the date of their album release.
Yeah.
But I wonder, and I hope that there is somebody gives a nod every year to it.
Yeah, that would be that's super fun. And how many bands have a day named after them? Is there a Lady Gaga Day? I don't think so.
Yeah, like, where would it be? Who could lay claim to that? She's right. a global phenom.
Is there a is there a Chumbawamba Day in Ireland? Aren't they Irish? Right? I mean, who knows? Right. But
because you also have to be famous enough to deserve a day, but also like embody the place that you're trying to get represented.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right. So maybe it's like Toby Keith gets American. You know, he has a national holiday because he's all American.
Well, local band does good. Good for the December.
right. Okay. The latest on the Decemberists is that they have scheduled a tour called Before the Mast, mm-hmm. which is the Decemberists' 20th anniversary tour, celebrating 20 years since the band formed back in 2000. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, awesome. This has all been postponed due to the pandemic. But the good news is that this means you can still go. Tickets are available. They're scheduled to play an 18-show mm-hmm. tour beginning August of this year. And that will include two nights, July 30th and 31st of 2021, at Edgefield, and that's in Troutdale, Oregon. It's like 20 minutes outside of Portland. And this is special because Edgefield is a McMinimins hotel and event space.
Oh, nice.
And it's got a massive outdoor field. It's great for shows and concerts. And you'll remember that McMinimins is where they played their first show, which helped them raise the money that they needed to record their very first EP.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that is the story of the Decemberists and Portland's local holiday, Decemberists Day.
I like that a lot. Okay, I now am going to move us into our final segment, which is our game for the week.
Mm.
We're going to revisit one of our favorites, which is Hearsay.
Yeah.
Yes, so this is the segment where we recall one of the places we talked about over the course of the episode, and we look at Yelp reviews that have spoken out about it with passion and gusto.
Yeah.
So I kind of knew... I mean, it's funny that you and I both had this sort of opposite feelings about Voodoo Donuts.
Ooh, I'll bet there are good reviews, yeah.
I just kind of sensed that it was the kind of place that people are passionate about one mm-hmm. way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I found a bunch of reviews. I'm just going to fire off some one-liners.
Okay.
From people, or one, or you know, one in some case, two-liners from people who did not like Voodoo Donuts.
Okay.
Who did not like Voodoo Donuts. And in some cases, I mean, I have to admit, these reviews are gems. Anne, who is obviously visiting from Overland, Kansas, said, "Grow up, make a decent product, and stop living on this funky, weird Portland vibe. It isn't that cute anymore. And at some point, you have to move out of mom and dad's basement and stop wearing emo t-shirts."
Yeah, that was written by mom and dad for sure.
I love that. This is Peter from Seattle. "Overrated. Don't waste your time in line. Why wait an hour for soggy cold donuts? It's a tourist trap. Don't do it for the gram."
Yeah, that real Seattle haterade coming at Portland.
Elizabeth, who lives locally, she's a Portlander, she said, "The food is garbage, typical hipster doofus nonsense that just passes for culture in Portland."
You know what I love about that is it's a donut shop. And she was like, "The food there isn't worth a dime," like as if they serve more than donuts and you were expecting something else.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. It's like, yeah, the food is garbage. She doesn't like the donuts. Let's move on. Okay. Kale from Portland says, "I mean, you have to go once with your visiting friend from out of town so they can see the penis-shaped donut and take a picture."
That person's name was Kale?
That person's name was Kale.
Classic okay, I've Kale.
I've got two more, and I've naturally saved the best for last. So Darcy from Clackamas, Oregon, which I assume is nearby, said, "You gave my daughter a donut with a pentagram on it. Are you devil worshippers or do you just think that's funny? It's not. Anyway, I removed it from the donut before she took the box to school this morning. Next time, how about you just take a giant poop on it and give that to her?"
These aren't real. They can't be.
Rage from Darcy from Clackamas, Oregon.
Oh,
I hope
my
I'm pronouncing
God.
That right. Yeah. Next time, how about just taking a giant poop on it and then give that to her?
Like, you pick out the donuts you want when you're there. She had to see the pentagram.
Yeah, right? Like, I don't think that her little kid, you know, ordered the cruller with Lucky Charms poured on top, and the management was like, "No, wait, let's serve that four-year-old child a devil donut."
Yeah, yeah, her get her into our school. Death cult.
And then the last one, and I love this. This is so funny. One star from B from San Francisco. B gives it one star, and she says, "When I went home and tried to poke this donut with a needle, my enemies weren't screaming in agony. Some voodoo donut."
You know what? That's a 5-star review. I am into it. Mm-hmm.
5-star. Yeah. B gave it 1-star, but really that is a 5-star review.
The description of a 5-star review. Okay. Quickly, before we go, recap of a lot of what we talked about today. What are your must hits when going to Portland?
Yeah. I mean, what I love about Portland is that it's a city that is simultaneously swanky and divey.
Yeah.
Right? Like every place you go into, you're like, this is a dive and it's so cool.
Yeah.
And cool people hang out here. So Portland is a city whose downtown is worth your time, but definitely get out into the neighborhoods. If you happen to be there with a car, the day trips, we can't stress this enough. It is so easy to get into nature from Portland. So do go, go see there's waterfalls within 20 minutes of downtown. There are beaches and farms all within a stone's throw. So go take advantage of that. I'm sure there are amazing Airbnbs in Portland, but I think you and I would agree there are some cool hotels to see in Portland. So
yeah, absolutely.
So even if you don't stay at one, maybe go check out the lounge or the lobby, or they're just a great place to hang out at, and definitely go hit up a food pod.
Yes.
Food cart park.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
That's from me.
And I'll second yours that go stay at a boutique hotel in Portland. And the other great thing about them is that they're really affordable compared to a similar product that you might find in a more expensive city. So here's your day. Stay at one of these boutique hotels. In the morning, get breakfast wherever the concierge says. Walk 20 or 30 minutes to the Rose Garden or the Japanese Garden. From there, go catch an early cocktail at the Teardrop Lounge and ask the bartender where to get dinner. That would be my recommendation.
We can't forget. After dinner, go to a strip club. Right? You have to do the Portland 3. Coffee in the morning, bookstore in the afternoon while you're wandering through some funky neighborhood.
Yeah.
And then late at night, find yourself a strip bar.
And bring your book to the strip club in case it's no good.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, that's it.
So, yeah, that is it for us. We are on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and everywhere else you can find podcasts. Please subscribe to us, share with your friends, tell everyone you know about us. We are also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is WYWHpodcast. You can email us at WYWHpodcast@gmail.com and tell us where to go next. And we are super excited about our new website. It is live. It is up and running. It is wishyouwereherepodcast.com. And remember that here is spelled H-E-A-R. So wishyouwereherepodcast.com. Go there for more on each episode, including maps to each place we recommend. So if you're seriously trying to write down every place we talked about, don't worry.
We've got you on the website.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it for us.
Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.